extreme dog stunts. Is Animal Planet showing the, you know, Canine X Games now?
I can't wait.
Yeah, me too. Hey, hey, hey. 8:36. Good morning, everybody, and welcome. Joining us here on the Capital Hour is the co-founder of the California Policy Center, Ed Ring. It's been a while, Ed. How you been?
Just fine. Thank you very much.
Pleasure to have you on. I was intrigued by this article over at CaliforniaGlobe.com that you wrote about how voters can transform California in one election. And you propose 10 different ballot initiatives that we might consider. And lest anybody think, oh, come on, this is a pipe dream, it couldn't possibly happen, you point out in the beginning of this article that in this next cycle, we have a blueprint that down in Oxnard they're doing at the local level. Tell people about this.
Well, that's true. In Oxnard, there's a local activist that's got five reforms that they're working on getting on the 2020 ballot. And, you know, without going into each of them, we could, but the point there is when you have five initiatives all together, you have an opportunity to not just do one good thing, but do a set of things that together almost become more than the sum of the parts. And you also have great economies of scale, both in terms of getting them on the ballot, because you can, it's just as easy to sign five petitions as it is to sign one. So when you put people out there to gather signatures to qualify these initiatives, why not have them qualify five or ten initiatives instead of one initiative? And then when you're marketing this slate of initiatives, again, you can run one campaign talking about five or ten initiatives with the same amount of funds as it would cost to run a campaign in support of just one initiative. So there's some real benefits, both in terms of what you're going to get for the amount you have to spend in time and money to get these on the ballot, but also in terms of being able to make all kinds of transformation in a single election.
Well, and I think that's a very important point you make. When we look at a single initiative, we're usually talking about a minimum about $5,000 that it takes to get it on the ballot by the time we go out and collect all the signatures and go through all the administrative procedures. But if you're doing them in as a slate, we might be able to not only make it more affordable, but if you package it properly, have people understand these are all reforms that kind of work hand in hand to transform California to some, return it hopefully to some level of sanity. Let's talk for a minute about some of your proposed initiatives, not the least of which regarding energy. Ed, how did we ever lose sight of the value of nuclear power in this state?
You know, that's a very good question, because there's been a relentless campaign against nuclear power legislatively and, of course, legally, and there hasn't been a lot of support from the federal government. The Public Utilities Commission has really been in favor. You know, they haven't pushed against, they've pushed for decommissioning the plants we've got. And in 2000, during the brownouts that actually led to the recall of Gray Davis, if we hadn't had San Onofre and Diablo Canyon putting out over 4 gigawatts of continuous power throughout that summer, it wouldn't have been brownouts. There would have been blackouts. And people at the Independent Service Operator, the ISO, the Cal ISO that manages California's power grid, have themselves said that. So you really get a lot of bang for the buck when you have a nuclear power plant. It's not intermittent, like renewable power, so you don't have to back it up with other power plants that can start up to when the sun goes down. It's just always putting out energy. I guess, you know, Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, now more recently Fukushima, have these accidents, despite the fact that in terms of actual power, accidents per power produced, nuclear power has the safest record of any form of energy. It's much safer than fossil fuel. It's much safer than renewables, especially when you take into account the costs to mine all of these rare earth metals and all the things it takes to actually build renewable power. Nuclear power is the safest energy, but these high-profile accidents have turned public opinion against nuclear power.
Well, and as my Salem colleague Dennis Prager continually points out, if you are genuinely concerned about CO2, then you should support nuclear power.
That's absolutely right. And it's really interesting that there's some theories that the fossil fuel industry, now I'm not demonizing the fossil fuel industry, but there are proponents of nuclear power who have made a credible case that the fossil fuel industry supports renewables because they know that the backup for renewables is going to remain natural gas or even coal into the foreseeable future, because you can't possibly load balance the power grid in California if you don't have quick start natural gas power plants that can spin back into power generation every single time there's some faltering of the wind.
Yeah.
or the cloud goes in front of the sun.
Well, and that brings us to your second proposal, which is pricing reform of renewables. We are now requiring renewable power suppliers to include in their pricing, or at least this would require them, the cost to deliver reliable power 24 hours a day. Because as you point out, you can't, with renewables, provide that power 24 hours a day. And people need to understand that. And I don't think most of them do.
This is really important. It's the reason that renewables, the cost for renewables is promoted as being cheaper than fossil fuel. You know, if that was true, then renewables would have already taken over the market.
Yeah, the market would have decided that by now.
It's not true. And what's happening are the mandated renewable portfolio standards, which require our public utilities to buy a certain percentage of their energy from renewable sources, don't take into account, when they do the pricing for these purchases, the amount of money that's going to have to also be spent to go buy power from other providers, natural gas typically, whenever there isn't renewable power being produced. And the way to solve that is to require any producer of renewable power in their pricing and in their contracts to guarantee, perpetual power. In other words, we're going to deliver 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. We're going to deliver continuous power. If you're going to buy, 100 megawatts of power from us, we're going to deliver 100 megawatts of power all the time. And if they have to build that into their pricing, the renewables providers, then they have to go out and make arrangements to get backup power when they're not able to get power from their renewable arrays, whether it's wind or solar. And they're going to have to bake that into their pricing. And all of a sudden, you'd find out whether or not renewables are truly competitive with conventional energy. And, of course, they're not.
Before we get to the break, let's touch on proposal number three, which is to redirect high-speed rail funds. That is a dead project, Ed. How much money might we have to spend on existing California rail systems if we just kill this project once and for all?
Well, that's a good question, because they've spent, I think the number is over $10 billion now. It's been spent. They lost the federal funds, which I think would have been another $3 billion. So the question is, what's in the coffers that hasn't been, because they've issued a certain amount of bonds, so they have some money left over they haven't spent yet before they issue the next tranche of bonds and continue to fund it. So the real point there isn't necessarily that they have all this money in the bank that we can spend on conventional rail instead. The point is, if we're going to do a project like that, if we're going to spend $50 to $100 billion, let's go ahead and fix all of our roads and railroads that we've already got. And if we did that, of course, that would be more than enough money to have the best transportation system in the country.
Well, and one of your other proposals is that we actually provide for additional and increased highway funding. The condition of California roadways is shameful right now, not only on our freeways, but especially our surface streets. I know here in unincorporated Sacramento County are just dreadful, and it's unforgivable that we have allowed it to fall into this kind of disrepair. And I am convinced, if nothing else made the ballot but this, Ed, I have to believe there is strong voter support for this.
Well, there is, and roads are the future, not the past, and that's something that the proponents of high-speed rail and light rail and everything don't understand. Roads are the future because cars are being completely reinvented and redesigned. You know, Senator John Morlock's talking about hyperlanes, where smart cars could convoy at 120 miles an hour in special lanes, and that's coming. That we're going to see that somewhere in the world. California's aerospace companies and all the automakers. Yeah, they're all here in California learning how to build smart cars. We've got all these ways that we can get more use out of every lane mile of road we've got by using smart cars. That's the future. Roads are versatile. Anything with wheels can go on a road. You can't have any flexibility with rail compared to roads. Roads are the future, so we should be putting all our money there. And it's ironic that California has leadership in developing the cars of the future, but they don't understand from a policy perspective that that means we ought to be upgrading our roads.
Yeah, very good point. Our guest is Ed Ring of the California Policy Center. We'll catch a break here. When we come back, we'll talk about more of Ed's ballot initiative proposals that he thinks in a single election could significantly transform California for the better. Nine minutes now before 8 o'clock, and one last chance to chat with our guest, Ed Ring, in the California Policy Center about his 10 ballot initiative recommendations that we could put on a single ballot and transform California in one fell swoop. I don't know if we'll get to all 10, Ed, but I think maybe the most critical one is number four on your list, and that is water infrastructure funding. And I'm a little nervous about this one because my sense is that a lot of us have voted for water bond money, thinking that it meant water infrastructure funding. I've spoken with people, Ed, who said they had friends who told them, yeah, no, I'm voting for that because we need more water. And even when you point out to them, well, you know, we're not getting more water, they still think they're voting for more water. How do we get over that hump?
Well, that's a big hump, but we took a pretty good look at what these water bonds had in them. There were three or four of them, but the last one, the most recent one, didn't pass because the Sierra Club wouldn't endorse it because it involved upgrading the Fremont-Kern Canal, which we absolutely have to upgrade that canal or we're going to lose half of our farm industry in the San Joaquin Valley. But, you know, the things that those bonds have in them are not bad things. Upgrading our aqueducts, fixing our levees are also things we have to do. But you're right, they were sold as water storage bonds, and we haven't done all that much.
Well, and don't we still have a lot of that bond money sitting unspent?
Yes. Last summer, they finally decided how much they would award for storage, and it wasn't enough. They did allocate money for what's called the Sites Reservoir, the site's ranch up in Colusa County. That's going to be a big reservoir. It's going to hold 2 million acre feet of runoff. It's off stream, so it's, you know, environmentally correct, doesn't block a river. It's kind of like the San Luis Reservoir. It takes runoff that's going through the aqueduct, or in this case, down the Sacramento River, and it pumps it up into a valley in the West Foothills in the Central Valley. That's got a dam up there. At the San Luis, they did that back in the 60s. It took 5 years to build that one. It's going to take probably 30 years to build this one. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons these things take so much longer and cost so much more. We still have to do it, and we have to figure out ways to streamline some of these processes so they can get built in a decade instead of two or three decades.
Well, and not the least of which is your recommendation, and there are others who are clamoring for some CEQA reform in this state.
Yeah, well, that's bipartisan, and yep. Something's going to happen, and hopefully it'll be decisive enough to actually make a difference. You've got they want to eliminate duplicative lawsuits. They want to eliminate blind lawsuits where people can sue without even disclosing who their contributors are, for example. They want to eliminate some of the delaying tactics that CEQA is used for. They want to eliminate rulings to stop entire projects on a single issue. You know, very. I'd be surprised if I see this one. But they want to make the losers in CEQA litigation pay the legal fees. If you could do all five of those reforms, and those, you know, those bullet points have been floating around for a long time. There's a lot of people that would like to see that happen. That would make a big difference. That would make it a lot easier to build things in California, which is really one of California's biggest problems, whether you're talking about housing or infrastructure. You can't build anything here unless you go through decades of litigation.
Well, and the point I made earlier in the hour when we were discussing the, you know, the high-speed rail project, I always use as the example the interstate freeway system, the highway system that we built in the 50s. Ed, that couldn't be done today.
No, it couldn't. And there's a lot of things like that that we simply, we just went out back in the 50s and 60s and built this stuff. And it's too bad. You know, we want to have some balance. We don't want to be as heedless of environmental impact as we may have been back there. But we have to bring some balance back into the process, or it's going to be just too hard to get anything done. You know, I'd really like to mention a related point, which is pension funds infrastructure investment. Nobody's talking about that, but it's been done elsewhere in the world, and it works really well. There's $800 billion of pension fund assets being managed just for California's state and local government workers. If you just took 10% of that money and said, you've got to use that money for revenue bonds to build infrastructure in California, you'd get 5% instead of their targeted 7%, but it's only 10% of your base. It wouldn't take much out of their portfolio earnings, but it would allow them, we would all of a sudden have 800 or more billion 800 excuse me 80 billion dollars 10% of those assets could be invested in revenue bonds to build some of these water projects, to upgrade our freeways, widen our roads. You could put this money into things like that, and that money's sitting there already.
Well, and I would further point out that, yeah, they would get 5% on those bonds, but that is still not the 7% that they promised, but that's still more than private pension managers are allowed to predict according to ERISA laws. So that still seems like a pretty solid investment.
Well, that's right, and it's only undermining by 2% 1 in 10 of the dollars that they've got out there that they're trying to get more than that on their investments, you know, so it wouldn't change their overall earnings by a significant amount. What a great way to get money, real money, you know, $80 billion invested in, and think about the jobs that would create at the same time.
No kidding. Well, there are other recommendations here as well in terms of pension benefit reform and a couple of education reforms that I think are sorely needed. Ed, we're out of time, though. I encourage everybody to go to CaliforniaGlobe.com and read the story, How Voters Can Transform California in One Election. Ed Ring, pleasure to have you on. It's been too long. Let's do it again soon.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much. That's it for us this week, everybody. Have yourselves a delightful weekend. Again, as Charlie said, remember those who gave their all this weekend. That's what Memorial Day is all about. We will see you bright and early Tuesday morning at 6 a.m. Dennis Prager is next.